welcome to Fish Fry. I'm your host, as always, Amelia M. Dalton from eejournal.com. And this week, we're talking hardware-assisted verification. Not an easy task, no. Like a nightmare, it keeps you up at night. It tunnels through your dreams, turns your ones into zeros, and always drinks the last can of Coke. Okay, wait. Maybe it's not all that bad, but... But before we get into some serious hardware-assisted verification business, I've got a brand new nerdy giveaway, y'all. That's right. I'm giving everyone the chance to win an Atmel AVR Butterfly, courtesy of Fish Fry's sponsor, Newark Element 14. If you want to enter to win this super cool kit of your very own, just click the link on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com or flap your little wings on over to element14.com/fishfry. Don't worry if you're not sure what exactly the Atmel AVR Butterfly is or what super cool stuff this kit contains. I'll fill you in later on in this broadcast. All right, get ready. We're going in. We're going to chat with Frank Schirmeister of Cadence Design Systems about why hardware verification is on everybody's minds these days and what we can do to make our verification lives a whole lot easier. Hi, Frank. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Amelia. How are you doing? It's great to be here.
So, Frank, why do you think hardware-assisted verification is on everybody's mind these days? What do you think are the challenges and the drivers here?
Well, the drivers and challenges for all verification, which is inherently still and probably always will be an unbound problem, meaning you never quite know when you're done and you need to get the confidence to actually trigger this button and go to tape out. The challenges really come from the sheer complexity. So if you look into latest data from people like Handel Jones at IBS, the cost for verification of designs, even at smaller nodes, and especially at smaller nodes, is just staggering. The software associated with those chips is a huge issue with adding a lot of cost as well. So you need to take into account those dependencies between hardware and software and verify them together. And then, of course, the chance to find a bug early is rewarded with lower cost to actually fix the bug. The later you find the bug in the project flow, if it's at the full chip level and you now have to fix something at that level or, God forbid, at the system level when the chip's out and system with its environment, the relative cost is just growing in a staggering exponential way there. So you need to find the bugs early. So verification complexity, hardware, software, the need to find bugs early. That's really the set of drivers.
So Frank, what do you think matters most for users of hardware-assisted verification? What should we care about the most?
Well, the investment in hardware-assisted verification is often a significant one, may it be in emulation or FPGA-based prototyping. We tend to capture the careabouts in three categories. There is productivity, what can you do with the hardware-assisted verification environment. There is predictability, how well can you set it up, how well does it scale. And then there is versatility of use models, what can you do with the hardware-assisted verification environment. Can you use it for many different types of questions you need to verify and answer? So for productivity, if you dig down further into that, it's all about speed, how many users you can run in parallel to either run regressions or attach lots of software developers, and it's about the capacity the system holds. For the predictability piece, it's all about the turnaround time. So at the end, both in combination give the user verification productivity. They need to be able to compile fast into the hardware accelerator. They need to be able to capture data as efficiently as possible while the system is running, and then they need to be able to analyze them in a very productive way once they're ready for analysis. So all this influences productivity and predictability. And versatility is really like, can you do things in circuit? That's a classic use model for emulation, for example. Can you do software development on it? Can you do simulation acceleration on it? And then in the case of our environment, there are a couple of very unique use models which users really appreciate. Can I do gate-level acceleration to verify that my gate-level implementation was correct? Can I do low-power analysis? And there are many more use models which users are interested to do with hardware-assisted verification environment.
All right, Frank, tell me about Cadence's side of things. Do you have a solution here?
Well, the thing we come out with now here in the September timeframe in 2013 is the next revision of Palladium, Palladium XP2, and it's by itself greatly improved. So you're looking at up to 50% performance increase, look at extending our already leading capacity up to 2.3 billion ASIC gates, which would be a huge design, of course, but then it's also accessible in partitions by up to 512 users. That gives, at the end, the user, from what they gave us in the beta engagements, about a twice increase in verification productivity. So there's a lot of improvement in the core platform, but it does also work best together with its neighbors, and neighboring engines are RTL simulation, so that's this whole simulation acceleration piece. There is FPGA-based prototyping, which you use a little later in the flow when RTL is more mature, doesn't change as much anymore, and you are interested in higher execution speed for software development versus very good debug and fast turnaround time to get the design into the box. Last not least, there is virtual prototyping, the VSP environment in our case, where you have transaction level models describing the design at a higher level of abstraction. So with all the improvements in the Palladium XP2 core platform, the next level is combining those with its neighboring engines. So one of the things we are releasing this fall here is the connection in a hybrid fashion to the virtual platforms, which gives you really, really good speed up when you verify embedded OSs. You get up to 60 times speed up, and it's giving you up to 10 times speed up for hardware-software-driven verification once the OS is booted, as well as things like bringing the whole test bench in an embedded way into the box, which allows you to bring up software driving the peripherals earlier in the flow and then ensures later on in the project much smoother post-silicon bring up. So core improvements in each of the platforms, and this fall a lot of improvements in Palladium with going to Palladium XP2, but it all needs to be connected to its neighboring platform, RTL simulation, virtual prototyping, and FPGA-based prototyping, and that's what our system development suite is all about.
Where is all of this going? What's next, and why?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, the overall verification exercise is an unbound problem. You're never really done verifying. We actually have users all the way through production continue to verify that everything's running correctly with the design. So that pressure isn't going away. It will be more complexity. The cost for fixing a bug later in the flow will be even bigger. So what's going to come is more improvements in the core engines. So all the engines like simulation is always looking in for more improvement in core parameters like speed and capacity. Same for FPGA-based prototyping and emulation. But then the key aspect is already visible when you look at the four core engines in the system development suite and what we did this fall. They are really, really growing together much more closely so that the user gets a coherent environment, open, scalable, and connected between these engines to move their design through the different phases in the project flow as efficiently as possible. So those connections will become much more important, those system flows across the engines.
Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today, Frank. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Same here. Thanks for having me, Amelia.
All right, confession time. I have a couple of frequently occurring dreams. No, we're not going to get into why my subconscious thinks it's necessary to keep going back to high school, for goodness sakes. Jeez. No, I have this reoccurring dream that I'm the host of a party, and there's not a soul there that I know. There's this big old party going on around me, and I have no idea how I got there, what to do, or who to talk to. Now, folks, what if this dream was reality? What if you're supposed to be hosting a party and you don't know the who, what, why, or how? And what if that party was actually your next design project? Okay, I hear you loud and clear. Where in the world am I heading with all this? Well, to the Internet of Things, of course. And how you can host your very own IoT party without all that I don't know what I'm doing here business. In my most recent episode of Chalk Talk, Enabling the Internet of Things, introducing Atmel SAM-D20 Cortex M0 Plus family, Andreas Island and I talk about some amazing new devices that can dramatically simplify the task of getting your next design into the IoT party. Come on, everybody likes a good party, right? And you can join this party by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page that says, Enabling the Internet of Things, introducing Atmel SAM-D20 Cortex M0 Plus family. Or you can head on over to the on-demand section of eejournal.com, or even further, check out the Chalk Talk section on the front page, lower right-hand corner, of eejournal.com. Come on, guys. The party's waiting. Now, folks, how about some information about this week's super cool nerdy giveaway, the Atmel AVR Butterfly? Yep, it's time to let this out of the cocoon. The AVR Butterfly uses the ATmega 169, which combines Atmel's state-of-the-art flash technology with the most advanced and versatile 8-bit microcontroller available. Together with a comprehensive feature set and low power consumption, the ATmega 169 takes on many of the butterfly's qualities, such as beauty and high efficiency at a very low energy consumption. This kit includes an ATmega 169 AVR microcontroller, 100-segment LCD display, 4-megabit data flash, 4-way directional button, light sensor, temperature sensor, speaker for sound generation, access to peripherals through header connections, and it also includes an AVR butterfly board and quick start user guide. So, if you want to enter to win one of these super cool kits of your very own, just click the link on this week's Fish Frying page that says, Enter to win an Atmel AVR Butterfly Kit, courtesy of Newark Element 14, or just head on over to element14.com/fishfry. Hey, just imagine if your Facebook feed had some useful information in it occasionally, like, say, a little EE journal sprinkled in. Yes, that would be awesome. You can like us at facebook.com/EEJournal. You can also check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM and join our circle on Google+. Oh yes, and by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can also grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you everyone for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, even if it's just a conference your company is hosting, heck, I'll come. Or the best geeky hotspot in your hometown, I especially like pinball, shoot me a line at amelia@techfocusmedia.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 13th, 2013, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.